All right, you're back in the DFSR. Here with the NASCAR podcast on Friday, March 23rd. I'm Doug Norrie. I'm here with Chris Durrell. Chris, how's it going, man?
Going great. Going through another snowstorm right now. Thought spring was here, but that's not the case.
That's what you get for living in Canada, buddy. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I'm living in Jersey. I'm still pissed at myself when we had the chance to move anywhere else but Jersey. We decided, you know, it would be a good place to live, Jersey. So whatever. Can't really complain about the bad choices in terms of real estate purchases. But this week we got NASCAR going. We had the STP 500 in Martinsville, Virginia. We have a bunch to discuss here. Well, let me rephrase. You have a bunch to discuss. I have some questions to ask you. As anyone that's listened to this podcast in the past knows, that I'm coming at NASCAR from a relatively new perspective. Chris is clearly the NASCAR expert among our tribe, and he does an excellent job every week on DFSR, breaking down the race, breaking down relevant statistics, putting together spreadsheets and data points that people can look at to start forming NASCAR lineups. And I try to just pick his brain here a little bit to see what he's looking for on a given week. This week's the STP 500 in Martinsville, Virginia. Like I said, lineups going in on DraftKings for Sunday, and we can talk a little bit about Chris, what you think. So let's start here. STP 500. Let's talk a little bit about the race first. What I've learned from you, and which shouldn't be news to anyone that has watched even 15 minutes of NASCAR in their life, that not every track is created equally. And it seems like this week we have specific track considerations for the race, in that it's just not what you see. It might not be your standard race. Break down a little bit what you see in the track this week, and then we can talk about how that affects some of the decisions for lineups.
For sure. So standard would definitely not be a word you're going to use for the track this week. Martinsville is a half-mile track, so it's the first short track of the season. So new to the drivers this year, as it's the first short track. But Martinsville itself is a little bit different from the other short tracks out there, just in that it's shaped like a paperclip. Like, if you were to search Martinsville Speedway on Google and have a look at the track, it looks exactly like a paperclip. So you got, long 800-foot straightaways, and then you got, they're going to be hard on the brakes. So drivers oftentimes use rhythm. It's a rhythm track where you're going, flooring it down those straightaways and then banging into the brakes to get around those tight corners for 500 laps. And not on top of that rhythm, you've got cars side by side, back to front. There's a lot of bumping and banging, and pretty much if your car doesn't come through this race with any dings or dents in it, you just weren't trying hard enough. So the other thing that's different from the other tracks so far this season is that there is 500 laps, and with 500 laps, that's going to bring a lot more laps led. So we're really looking at dominators drivers this week, more than most weeks, I would say. And just kind of looking at the stats, going on the cheat sheet here, I break down the last six races at every track, and looking at Martinsville, there's been at least two drivers in five of the last six races here that have led over 100 laps. So there's usually two or three dominators here. Twice, actually three times in those six races, there's been at least one driver to lead over 200 laps. Twice it's been Kyle Busch. So right away, he's going to be, just looking at those stats, he's going to be very high owned this week. So that's kind of one thing that we're looking at this week, just with being more laps, is you're going to have more dominators, more fast laps, more laps led.
I have a couple questions about So one, I have a question about what you mentioned with the short track and some of the bumping and banging that you might get in there. What kind of, you've talked to a lot of these drivers, I don't know if this ever came up in some of the interviews that you've talked to with drivers about, but how much of that, maybe a shorter track like this, or when the cars are getting closer together, like you said, how much of a physical toll do you think that takes on the drivers? I mean, there's one thing like a mental sort of component to where you're just, obviously you're just driving at very fast speeds, but at what point will some of that take a physical toll on your body? Like, is that something the drivers need to prepare for? I'm not sure if it's totally DFS relevant, but I just found it interesting now that I'm thinking about it. If that is something that you need to maybe just prepare your body for in a way that you don't have to for some of the longer track races.
And, I think it kind of depends on, the temperature and stuff like that. This week, that's not going to be an issue in the car. Usually, the hot temperatures at some of these tracks, it's getting to be, 120, 130 Fahrenheit inside the car. And that's kind of where the physical part comes in. This week, we've got highs of, low 40s on Saturday and Sunday with a chance of snow tomorrow. So, it's, it's pretty different temperatures, I guess you could say, there. It was a little bit colder last year in Martinsville in the fall race. But this year, it's, that's kind of unheard of for a race in NASCAR in the low 40s. So I don't think it's so much physical, preparation. It's more of a mental preparation because, like I said, you're flooring it and then you're braking, you're flooring it, then you're braking for 500 laps with all those cars around. There is a lot of bumping and banging. So people, drivers usually get, they're going to want to get ahead early. So they're going to push things a lot more. So I think mentally it's more of a, you got to stay sane because once you let one driver bump you in the rear and that gets to you, you maybe take him out, he takes you out, then you're out of the race. So I think it's more of a mental preparation than physical this week.
Really interesting. And my other question about that in regards to the track, and maybe you were going to get into this, and I apologize if you were, but in terms of these short tracks, and it's 500 laps where you mentioned how there had been some drivers that had led for 100 and 200 laps. How much does that come into consideration with, clearly when you're leading laps, you need to pass cars, right? Like to be able to gain advantage in NASCAR, my guess would be that, it's about your ability to pass cars. Do sometimes the shorter tracks lend themselves to that because it's easier to pass through turns? Do the straightaways matter more for stuff like that because you can gain speed? Like, where do you see your ability to sort of switch positions in a race change depending on sort of the makeup of the track? Let's say all drivers are created equally, right? Which track would allow for that to happen more at, or is it kind of just so track specific that you can't really break it down?
Right, like last week, for instance, at Fontana, it's a 2 mile track and it's a lot wider, so there's multiple lanes where guys can ride their cars even in the corners, straightaways. That track lends itself more to easier passing. But this week, even kind of looking at the place differential points, there is a lot of those double-digit place differential points. And a lot of times, especially with the new stage racing, that comes with your pit stops. Because this year, they've taken away a guy on the wall. They've all got the same pit guns now. So the pit stops have gone up like 2, 3, 4 seconds. So you make one little mistake on pit road, you can gain or lose a lot of spots. So that's where a lot of the double-digit place differential, I guess, is going to come in. Because the passing on track, being that it's a smaller track, is very tough. You're going to see guys maybe jump out on the outside lane and try and get around on the straightaways. But if they got caught out there when you get into the corners, they're going to lose 3, 4, 5 spots within a half lap just because you want to be kind of down on that on the lower lane when you're going into the corners, or you're just going to get left behind.
Really interesting stuff. Yeah, I never had considered like this deep of a dive on NASCAR. I mean, you handled this so well that I've been blessed to not have to think too much about it. But because I just know you have it so well covered. But these little track intricacies and these little differences in terms of just hitting the pit and knowing which teams are maybe best equipped at handling that. I mean, I hope I'm not going too off course, and we can get to some of the drivers here in a second. I'm sure that's what people are tuning in to listen to. But how much do you need, if that's the case, how much do you need to start factoring in pit crews? If these are going to be the little seconds that matter, are there certain pit crews that just dominate these statistics better than others? Are there ways to evaluate that, or is that so subject? Are we getting into such a subjective territory in terms of getting tires on them that it's hard to guess in the moment? Or are there crews that kind of stand out as being better than this, especially if it's really going to matter this week?
Yeah, and it is a little bit subjective, but they're ticking away. Like I said, they went down from 6 to 5 over the wall, and I think the reason they, it's a safety thing for sure, but they put a lot more emphasis on those pit crews, like talking about them on air and on TV and stuff like that. And I think eventually there's going to be stats out there, a lot better stats to find. Finding NASCAR stats in general is a little bit tougher than other sports, especially sports like baseball and basketball. But I think in the future we're going to have more stats that we can go off of, because it is a really huge thing when you come into the racing, especially with the stage racing, is if you can gain a couple spots on pit road over the course of a 2-3 hour race, that's going to make up a lot of time. And teams will try different strategies. If they got a good pit crew, maybe stay out a little bit longer on some tracks, or short pit, which means they're going to pit 2 or 3 laps before other teams to try and get an advantage, so they have newer tires at certain times of the race and stuff like that. So there isn't really a lot of stats now. It's more of the eye test, watching the race to see which pit crews. Joe Gibbs Racing's always got pretty good pit crews. Team Penske's right up there as well. So those are kind of ones that I kind of look at, but I don't really analyze it, that deep yet, because there's really not a lot of stats, and I'm a big stats guy, so I like to go off the stats, but it's more of an eye test thing right now.
For sure, and that's one of the things I think as we still get into more of the proliferation of statistics just in the general sports world, it seems like NASCAR my guess is sort of right for the picking. You know, we've been down the road, like you mentioned, baseball. Like, baseball has been picked every single direction from Sunday in terms of, like, what you can look at, maybe because the game's so slow and nothing else is happening, so people have no other time, nothing else but to just think about it. But these teams, like, my guess just from even hearing you talk is that these are the things that are going to continue to come out. Like, baseball park didn't matter. No one cared about baseball park until someone realized that it really mattered, and then all of a sudden there were stats everywhere about it, right? Like, all you need is someone to figure out, and usually that comes honestly from gambling and some point of view, to make sure that you are fully with it. All right, let's talk about some of the drivers this
week. Before you jump into the drivers here, one thing I did miss when it came to pit road and things that do matter is where you're positioned on pit road, like where your team is positioned, and that's always whoever qualifies first, they get their first pick at the pit box. Well, this week, what we're going to notice is if there's two practices on Saturday and then qualifying after that on Saturday, if this snow and this weather continues, what we're going to see is it's going to be set by owner points. So you're going to see like Martin Truex Jr. is at the top of the owner points right now, the Furniture Row Racing 78 team, 18 of Kyle Busch, 22 of Penske, 2 of Penske, 12 of Penske. So all three Penske cars are in the top five. So those teams could see a little bit of an advantage in where they're positioned on pit road this week. Just due to, if they don't get to qualify, it's going to be set by owner points. So that's one thing that I'm going to kind of update throughout the weekend in my video on Saturday, and just maybe give a list of the top 10 and maybe even take a picture of that assignments, the pit road assignments, and tweet that out as well.
Yeah, really interesting about how, too, like the information gap can really come into play here without qualifying. I mean, so how worried do you get if you do not get a qualifying round? Like, what are we, besides the pit row piece, what else can we get from the qualifying on Saturday? Or I mean, and then conversely, what would we lose by not having it happen? Let's say if they are qualifying, what kind of stuff are you looking for? And then I guess we can just make the summary that if we did not have that information, we'd have to go off something else. But give us your thoughts here going into the weekend with weather concerns on qualifying and what you're looking for.
Well, if they don't qualify and it goes off owner points, what we're going to see is, all the stronger cars in the series are going to be starting closer to the front. Whereas on some weeks, especially like last week, there were 13 cars that didn't qualify, and there's a lot of strong cars that were starting towards the back. Now that's going to shift a lot of the strategy like it did last week, because there's a ton of place differential value with strong cars starting in the back of the field, with a good opportunity to pick up a lot of place differential points. If they don't qualify this week, we're not going to see as much of that place differential, putting even more emphasis on those dominator points and the guys starting at the front and which guys are going to lead laps. Conversely, if they don't practice as well, we're not going to have any of that data to go off of on the spreadsheet. We're going to have no practice times, no qualifying. We're going to know where they're going to qualify, but we're not going to be able to so much pick out which guy's got the strongest 10-lap run, which guy's got the strongest car over the short run, maybe good on the restarts. We're going to have to go a lot more on current track history and career track history, which I kind of throw out the window, but when it comes to weighting my model, I usually it's like 60-80% on practice times, and down into that 20-40% of track history and stuff. So if we don't have those practice times this week, we just got less data to go off of, and have to rely a little bit more on current track history. And it kind of, I think it's going to help spread the ownership around a little bit, because everyone's going to be so close together. All the good cars are at the front. But it's going to put more ownership, I think, on guys like Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, two guys that have been, pretty dominant here when it comes looking at laps led and DraftKings scoring.
Interesting. So, right. So that makes sense that it would favor the known quantities over the unknowns without having some of the baseline kind of stuff. Anything else you're looking for in qualifying this week besides just speed? I mean, are there pieces of that you're going to try? Let's assume they do the qualifying round on Saturday. The weather holds up. Is there anything else that you want to kind of just hone in on, like more than some other stats? Because of this race, or is it sort of just all in this in qualifying ways are all races sort of created equally in what you look for in the queue?
Passing's a little bit tougher, but like I said, you can really get some place differential points, so that's really all I'm looking for in the data from qualifying. Is I like to compare every week where they qualified versus, so if they qualified say 30th, then go and look at their practice times and see, okay, well, in practice, they show that they're a top 10 car. So automatically in my model, that guy's going to get a big bump because he's showing that he's got a top 10 car, but he's starting back in the field. So he should be able to pick up 10 to 20 place differential points, which are going to be huge to his overall DraftKings score. And so that's kind of how I analyze that. Conversely, if you get a guy that puts out a good qualifying run, qualifies top 10, but he's running like 15th to 20th outside the top 20 in practice, that's maybe going to be a guy that you're going to want to fade.
Interesting. So let's talk about some of the specific drivers this week that you are at least, you know, understand everyone that when you're listening to this, we don't have the Saturday information whether we're going to get it or not. But just on the surface, where are some places that your eye is kind of leaning toward? I guess your eye doesn't lean. I guess where is your eye kind of going toward? Where's your body leaning toward? Where are you kind of glancing at in terms of which drivers you're looking at? And maybe if we could have some on different ends of the spectrum, the pricing spectrum, right? Like if there's a couple higher tier guys that you think are well suited for this kind of track, so maybe a middle tier or lower tier guy that could come out of nowhere. Or maybe just be under-owned in terms of, you know, when your model and what you look at. Are there guys that stand out to you this week?
For sure. Well, first of all, I talked about him quite a bit already, but Kyle Busch in the number 18 for Joe Gibbs Racing, and he's going to be right there at the top. He's been dominant here from a fantasy perspective lately. Over, like, I look at the last 2 years, which is four races here at Martinsville. He's won two of them. He's finished top five in all four of them. He's led 813 laps, and he's averaging 135 DraftKings points per race, which is 34 more than Brad Keselowski, who's in second. And then no other driver has more than 60 average per race. So he's been absolutely dominant here. So he's got two career wins here, which are in the last 2 years, of course. So, but even over the last six races, he's still averaging 116 DraftKings points per race. And if they qualify based off of owner points, so if they don't actually run the qualifying, they're just going to set the field by by owner points, he's going to be starting inside the top three. So he's going to have a good chance to get out front into the clean air and lead a bunch of those laps. So right off the bat, he's there. Brad Keselowski, like I said, he's second in the DraftKings average scoring. He's won a race here in the last four races, and he's the only other driver besides Kyle Busch to finish all four of those races inside the top five as well, and he's got an average finish of three over those four races as well. So those are kind of guys over 10K. Those are the two over 10K that I'm going to be focusing on this week, and both of them, like I said, are going to be starting inside the top five if they set the field by owner points. So right off the bat, those are the top two. And then just kind of a value guy that I'm concentrating on down in the middle is 7,700 is Austin Dillon in the three. He's been very successful here. He's finished inside the top 20 in all but one race in his career going back to 2014. And he's finished top five in each of the last two spring races here at Martinsville. He's not a guy that's going to lead a bunch of laps unless something weird happens. So he's not going to get the dominator points. But looking at the owner points, I think he's going to be starting, I don't have him in front of me here, but I think he's going to be outside the top 10. So he has a chance to pick up some place differential, and he's got a strong car here. And then again, he's under 8,000 this week, so he's going to be a guy I'm going to be looking at cash games and GPP formats.
1 second. So with Dillon, you know, when you say he's not a guy that's going to be leading, what helps you make that determination? You say you mentioned he's not going to be leading unless something weird happens. Just for someone like me that might not understand why that, well, and it's fine to understand that it's just an opinion, but like what would give you that opinion about a driver like him as opposed to maybe another driver? Is where he starts, is it like his style of driving? What makes it, what would weird have to happen for him to be leading the race, I guess is my question.
His team, the Richard Childress Racing, they just don't have the same, well, first of all, he's in a Chevy, and Chevys have kind of struggled a bit. I mean, there is no aero dependency here at Martinsville on a short track, so we don't got to worry about that. But he generally doesn't lead a lot of laps because you're going to see guys like Kyle Busch in JGR. You're going to see Martin Truex Jr., who's a satellite team with them in Furniture Row Racing. The Penske cars in Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano, Ryan Blaney. Another Joe Gibbs Racing, Denny Hamlin leads laps, 42 of Kyle Larson. So there's a lot of drivers that have stronger cars. They're more experienced drivers. They lead a lot more laps versus these kind of mid-range. And that's kind of the reason why they're priced in the mid-range, is because they don't have that upside of leading a bunch of laps, unless you're looking at, say, a Daytona or a Talladega, where, you know, a driver like that can get out front in the draft and lead some laps. But on most tracks, they're not going to lead any laps. Like, I don't think he's ever led a lap here. No, he's led six laps back in 2015. So in one race, he kind of got out front. But chances are, if for some reason he gets out front after, say, a pit stop, a yellow flag or something, he's only going to lead maybe one or two laps before these stronger cars are going to be able to get around him.
And it's really interesting for me, especially coming at this, of like, you know, just your equipment matters too, right? Like, you can be the best driver in the world, and if you're just, I know, someone driving my car as opposed to the race car, it's like the best driver in the world is going to struggle if their equipment isn't up to snuff. Yep. Also, and so it's interesting to think about, just say, you know, if your equipment is nanoseconds faster than, or, you know, milliseconds faster than the next guy, that stuff kind of really matters. Before we get out of here, give us a couple or one or two possible, maybe some cheaper guys in the lower end of the spectrum that maybe aren't going to probably win the race, but can grab you some of those points, because, you know, obviously with NASCAR, only one guy is going to win the race anyway, so you're going to have to fill out your lineup with these other guys that are going to make up points along the periphery. Any cheap guys that we can kind of hone in on?
Yeah, so usually every week I try and look for at least one punt play. You can usually find a second one after practice and stuff like that. But one that I'm looking at this week is Landon Castle. He's bare minimum $4,500 on DraftKings this week. He's taken over the double zero car for Starcom Racing, who parted ways with Jeffrey Earnhardt early this week, I believe. So he's jumping into a car. This will be his first cup race of the season. He's got lots of experience in cup for sure. But chances are, especially if qualifying, like I said, gets set by owner points, he's going to be starting probably outside the top 30, probably near the back. And he's actually finished inside the top 30 in nine straight races, and he's actually got top 20 in that time as well. So he's going to have he's first of all minimum price, so we're only looking at like 10 to 15 DraftKings points for him to really hit value at 4,500, because he's going to help you get, say, a Brad Keselowski and a Kyle Busch together in a lineup. And two, he's got upside of, you know, 15 to 20, maybe even 20 plus, because he's got good experience here. He's raced here, it looks like, about 15 times throughout his career, average finish of 27 throughout his career. And if he starts outside the top 30, gets a top 25 finish, that's some nice place differential points. So he's got a nice floor for the price, but he's also got upside as well.
Yeah, man, great stuff. What kind of stuff are we looking out from you for this weekend? I know you're always on Twitter a ton. You'll be on our site talking and posting some stuff. What should we be on the lookout to keep up with for Saturday and Sunday morning? Videos, tweets, what kind of stuff should we keep a lookout for you to know that we're getting the best information for this race?
For sure. So I'm going to be paying close attention to the weather, some of the big names in NASCAR that are actually at the track this week, to what's going on there. So by Saturday morning, I'm going to have a good feel of whether they're going to be practicing or qualifying. So if they do, my sheet's going to be updated as those are going on, along with the models going to be updated. If those don't happen, if there is no practice and qualifying, I've got a video that's going to be coming out Saturday with, I'm going to go over my sheet. A lot of new people coming into NASCAR, so I like to go over my sheet, how to use it, how to best use it to make good picks every week. So, and then, of course, I like to go over about six or eight of my top picks as well on that video. And then I'm in the DFSR chat room pretty much daily, so if you have any questions, hit me up there. And like I said, pay attention to me on Twitter, at @Jaeger_bombs9.
All right, man. Great stuff. I'm looking forward to you looking forward to the race this weekend for sure. I make no bones about it. I don't watch this stuff, but I actually do love talking about this stuff, because I do love just finding out new ways that people are looking at sports that I maybe haven't paid attention to in the past. So even if you're not a NASCAR fan, figuring out these little pieces of information, if you're a data person, or you love kind of trying to break down where the mystery lies and trying to figure out predictive models, it's always fun looking at a new thing and try to figure out where the edge is. So go check out all the work that Chris is doing over on dailyfantasysportsrankings.com. Go and check him out on Twitter, like I said, Jaeger_bombs, Jaeger_bombs9 over on Twitter. He's got a YouTube channel that he's putting up high quality videos on also every single week. No one's doing a better job at NASCAR, I don't think, than our man Chris Thorell. Chris, good luck with the race this week, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Cheers, buddy.